Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, our final show of the week to preview Packers-Vikings on Sunday Night Football. Should be a great one in prime time, opening up the new U.S. Bank Stadium, as we've talked about all week. I'll throw it to you. What do you see as the key or keys to this game?
Well, it goes without saying Adrian Peterson, just because of what he's done in the past. And I know a lot of the Packers defensive players were asked about this during Thursday's locker room session. 19 carries for 31 yards. Is he still the same running back that he always has been? Clay Matthews talked about it. Hey, he's not going to run for 100 yards every week, and you can't take any more really complacency or comfort in the fact that he is coming off a down game. If anything, that probably makes you a little bit more weary of potentially how he could play. So
yeah, I would agree.
The biggest thing, and Dom Capers talked about this when he met with the media this week, is this pursuit and finish emphasis that the Packers have placed this year. When they went back and looked at last season, they felt like they were a much better run defense than the statistics showed, but they gave up way too many big plays. They want to see guys swarming to the ball, and if you use that first game against the Jaguars as a barometer of that, I think it's been pretty positive as far as how the team has reacted to it.
Yeah, it's interesting how Dom Capers went back and charted kind of the entire season on run defense, and I'm not sure exactly what statistical measures he uses, but he likes to grade every running play as either a win or a loss for his defense based on how they did. He felt like they won a vast majority of snaps against the run, but the total number of yards they gave up on the run and where the ranking was as a run defense was lower than it should have been because of too many explosive plays.
Absolutely, and that is ultimately what's going to get you. It doesn't matter if it's the quarterback, the running back, someone coming out on a reversal. It all counts for the same when you're looking at running plays at the end of the day. And ultimately, those are things, too, that a defense has to overcome. If you get in that situation where you give up an explosive, you know, 25, 30, 40-yard gain that even if it doesn't score a touchdown is really demoralizing for a mindset of a defense. So that's the biggest thing. And I think when you look at that game and some of the tackles and tackles for losses that we witnessed, it wasn't just one guy. It was a bunch of players swarming to the ball. The biggest example of that being that final play where they were able to stop Allen Hurns shy of the first down to seal that victory.
Yeah, that was the classic pursuit and finish that Mike McCarthy had been talking about all offseason and through training camp. It showed up in the first game. I'm going to throw an Adrian Peterson statistical analysis at you that I've done. This will actually be in my Saturday One Last Look column on Packers.com. Adrian Peterson's played 15 career games against the Packers, including the one playoff game here at Lambeau Field. His average rushing yards in those 15 games, 110, which is pretty impressive. He's averaged 110 yards against the Packers. In the six games that he's been above 110 yards, the Vikings are 2-4. In the nine games he's been below 110 yards, the Vikings are 3-6. It's the same winning percentage. Yeah. So I'll throw this at you. The average quarterback rating for the Vikings in those 15 games is 72.7. When the quarterback is above that average rating, the Vikings are 3-1. When he's below that rating, they are 2-9. That tells me that as much talk as there is about Adrian Peterson, there's a lot on Sam Bradford in this game, assuming the Vikings go that direction, and all indications are they are going with Bradford. This game really could come down to the Vikings quarterback.
You and I discussed it earlier this week. It is a big plus for the Vikings when they get Adrian Peterson going and you know, over 150, 199 yards, some of those games that we talked about. That is something that obviously is going to help this offense, but it's not something that the Packers can't overcome. As those stats show, they have overcame that. It ultimately comes down to what the Vikings offense is able to do with those performances out of Adrian Peterson. Are you able to get a solid performance out of the quarterback? Does it translate to other facets of the offense? And just based on Spoff stats and info over there, it sounds like in many cases it hasn't. So that's going to be the biggest thing. If it is going to be Sam Bradford in this game, whatever Adrian Peterson gives you, 50, 100, 150 yards, whatever it may be, how is the passing offense able to play off of that?
Yeah, I agree. The guy that I'm interested to watch in this run defense against Adrian Peterson is Clay Matthews. Now, we saw Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, LaTroy Guyon, Dayton Jones, all really solid against the run in Jacksonville. They will all be a big part of this as well. But we saw that play that Clay Matthews made on, I think it was a toss sweep to the right, to the offenses right that Jacksonville had, he knifes between two blockers and just buries T.J. Yeldon for like a 7 yard. I mean, 7 yard loss. Who loses 7 yards on a running play? Yeah. Clay Matthews completely wrecked that play. And with him back on the outside now against Adrian Peterson, I see him, even though he's not in the middle like he's been the last couple of years, he's still a big part of the run defense against number 28.
I can't think of a specific play off the top of my head, but also there was that play where I believe it was also Yeldon, where Matthews just comes completely off the left side, almost untouched, or I should say the right side, almost completely unblocked. And he just misses the tackle. If he would have gotten that, it would have been about another 5 yard loss. Instead, Yeldon trickled out. I think it was a stop for no gain. But still, those are the plays where he does cause disruption in a defense or in an offense for a defense. And that was one of the things last year when he wasn't getting the sacks. He did talk about that. He's like, you know, tackles for a loss aren't that bad either, even though they don't have the same cachet to them. And realistically, whether it's a tackle for a loss or a sack, those negative plays add up and really can be difficult to overcome for an offense.
Yeah, and Adrian Peterson, a tough guy to bring down on first contact, as we know. So plenty more key players to examine here heading into this Packers-Vikings matchup. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, for all the talk about Adrian Peterson, let's switch to his counterpart in this game, Packers running back Eddie Lacy. You look at Lacy's track record over the years, he has 10 career 100-yard rushing games in the regular season, four of those 10 against the Vikings. Do you think there's a particular explanation or reason for that?
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question. Maybe some of these later season matchups has kind of tilted towards his favor and advantage.
The cold weather, pound the ball.
Yeah,
type
when you
of
get
stuff.
Into November, it seems like they've had a lot of November and December encounters with the Vikings as of late. But realistically, maybe it has something to do with the fact that Eddie Lacy always seems to be, whether it was in his, you know, Pro Bowl year in 2013 or even last year, he always seems to get better as the season wears on. And certainly he did that last year when you go to that game in November at a time in which the Packers really needed to get a good performance, not only out of him, but this whole offense.
Right.
And he stepped up in a big way, and the Packers were able for that 1 week to really get their offense set straight, and it started to look more like the offense we're accustomed to seeing. So this is a good defensive front. I mean, Linville Joseph is as good as of a nose tackle as you're going to find in the NFL.
Yeah, no question.
They have really young, active linebackers, so it's not like it's something where everybody's just going to be able to get yards off of Tennessee. It probably just goes to say that, you know, Eddie Lacy, when he's right and he's playing at his best, is one of the best running backs in the league and difficult for even the best to take down.
Yeah, well, I think Eddie Lacy, I see Eddie as a pretty confident guy right now. And what I mean by that, he's always pretty laid back. He doesn't really show a whole lot of emotion off the field or anything like that. But I asked him a question yesterday in the locker room when reporters were gathered around. I said, hey, Eddie, fourth and one on the opening possession in Jacksonville after the Packers took over with the interception. And Mike McCarthy called his number, gave it to 27 right up the middle, got the great blocks from Taylor and Bakhtiari, a nice cut block from Randall Cobb, and he burst through there for 9 yards. And I asked Eddie, did that mean something to you, the head coach calling your number right away there on fourth and one? He said, yeah, it did. And it was a confidence boost for Eddie. It's a confidence boost for this offensive line. Now, I think they are facing a much stouter, a much more active run defense in Minnesota than they faced in Jacksonville. But that early sign with Lacy plowing ahead on fourth and one and getting that yard when they needed it, I think that bodes well.
That's a big key for Eddie Lacy, because at times, even when in 2013 and 14, the short yardage situations weren't always a strength for the Packers' run game. And sometimes, even when Lacy was really hitting everything well, they could come up short in those areas. So I don't even know if it's so much just Eddie Lacy and, you know, he needs this right now. This is what he's looking for. I just think it's something that tells you where the rushing offense is at this point in time. And certainly from Mike McCarthy's perspective, with him handling play calling duty again, to have the confidence to take Eddie Lacy, run him right in that B gap behind Lane Taylor, the new left guard. I thought that was a good, strong confidence show of confidence by the Packers offense and the play caller to go that direction. And Lacy certainly paid it off tenfold. I mean, when he is getting an opportunity to get away from that first contact, there's not very many defensive backs and secondary, you know, safeties that are going to be able to take him down.
Yeah, and he had on his big 28-yard run in Jacksonville, he had that one move in the open field where he planted his left foot and dodged the safety, and the safety completely whiffed. And it was interesting because normally you'd expect Lacy in that situation to either drop the shoulder or go to the spin move.
Press
and
circle.
He did neither one. It was stick the foot in the ground and make a move and keep up the full head of steam. And he kind of joked around, said, yeah, well, maybe I've given, you know, that defender another thing to think about when they're coming at me in the open field. Again, it's just, to me, it's what I see is a confidence that's building in Lacy, and I think he's going to play a big factor on Sunday night.
Lacy finishes a lot of sentences with a laugh, you know, and a big smile and things like that, and he never really takes himself too seriously. But I did like that comment from him, though, because it is true. That's something that all running backs need to develop. Everybody knows the spin move and how, you know, potent that can be for him in the run game. But having multiple looks, like things that safeties that are converging, defensive backs that are converging, players that have to make a decision on what angles they're going to take, it's good to have multiple different looks that they're going to have to take into account for. As good as he is at the spin move, if he can add a couple other pitches to that repertoire, so to speak, that's something that I think can really benefit him in the long run, especially for this rushing game going forward.
Yeah. Another guy let's talk about quickly who I think could play a factor in this game on the Viking side. They're talking about him a lot in Minnesota. We haven't talked about him much in Green Bay, and that's kicker Blair Walsh. We all know he missed the 27-yarder at the end of the playoff game against Seattle. It ended Minnesota's season last year. He did not get off to a great start in Tennessee last week. He missed one long field goal that anybody can be forgiven for, but he also missed a field goal from 37 yards.
His first one of the day.
And missed an extra point also in the game, the new 33-yard distance. Now, he made four field goals,
right.
But boy, I tell you, with this guy and everything that went into that playoff game last year and the whole aftermath in the offseason, anytime he misses a kick, you just have to be wondering.
Yeah, absolutely. The extra point, too, is a little concerning just based on that having some similarities to the kick he missed last year in the playoff game. And those aren't gimmies anymore. I think Brandon Myers from Jacksonville is reading something. I mean, he had seven missed extra points last year.
Yeah, it was a high
something
number.
Something incredible.
Yeah.
So the fact that Mason Crosby's been as automatic as he's been so far from 33 yards is certainly worked to the Packers' benefit. But in Walsh's particular case, he's such a strong leg kicker. So much talent there in terms of what he has. It's just mentally that these things can kind of come up on you. And yeah, you miss a 56-yarder, fine. You know, before halftime, whatever. But missing the 37-yarder right out of the gate, I think, is kind of something that the Vikings still have to have in the back of their mind of, is this guy completely back from that yet?
Yeah, and we saw Jacksonville go for it on a lot of fourth downs against Green Bay. Maybe Minnesota does that a little bit too if they're maybe on the edge of field goal range there. So we'll see. We'll throw it to a break from there. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, let's take a quick look at the other matchups in the NFC North in Week 2. Monday Night Football, Philadelphia Eagles at the Chicago Bears. The Eagles got a nice opening impressive performance from their new quarterback, Carson Wentz, that they drafted in the first round. Granted, that came against maybe the worst team in the NFL in the Cleveland Browns, so I don't know how much stock you put into where Philadelphia is right now. The Bears coming off a loss down in Houston. They're 0-1. This playing at home on Monday night, trying to avoid an 0-2 start, a pretty big game for the Bears.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that about the Browns because it's such a not, like, Carson Wentz can't win. Because it's like either you play really well against arguably the worst team in the league, or you play terrible against the worst team in the league, and then suddenly everybody's wondering why you're the second overall pick. But I thought, considering some of the issues right now that the Rams are having in their development with Jared Goff, it was really impressive how he handled that game and that atmosphere and that offense, considering, you know, this is a new head coach with Doug Peterson, and it is kind of a changing sort of culture a little bit after the Chip Kelly era. So
and the trade with Bradford.
And the trade with Bradford. Trading
Bradford to Minnesota late in training camp, and then Wentz all of a sudden is elevated to the number one job when maybe he wasn't going to have it.
Totally. So for him to come out and play the way he did, I thought that was great. Now, the thing about this game against the Bears is that it's such a different defense that they're going to be seeing. I've said this numerous times, I love Vic Fangio's scheme because there are a lot of parallels to what Dom Capers did. Same disciple of that 3-4 philosophy. And I think this is going to be a good matchup for Wentz now, seeing if he can match up with that. Offensively, from the Bears' perspective, it sounded like everything went well with the offensive line last week. But now, how do all the rest of the pieces fit? How does Kevin White become a factor in this offense? And is that something that they can exploit against the Eagles?
Yeah. The other NFC North matchup, Detroit opening its home schedule against Tennessee. And Detroit last week, not a whole lot of defense on the field in Indianapolis. They won a shootout with the Colts. A great offensive performance by Detroit. First game without Calvin Johnson, with Megatron being retired. But certainly some defensive issues for Detroit. Big picture, though, a chance against Tennessee for the Lions to get to 2-0 and be coming to Lambeau Field in week three in pretty good position.
Absolutely. I mean, keep in mind how they finished last year as well. I mean, that's kind of probably one of the reasons Jim Caldwell, you know, and Jim Bob Cooter are still in Detroit, was the way they finished last season. And I saw an incredible stat. I wish I could remember exactly who came up with it, but I mean, Matthew Stafford, since Jim Bob Cooter became the offensive coordinator, 22 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 72% passing completion percentage.
Wow.
In that stretch of games right now, which I believe Detroit's like 7-2 or 8-2. So it's really been able to work well for him. And honestly, as important as Megatron is, Matthew Stafford is the former first overall pick that was seen as really the savior for this franchise. They want to get him back to playing at that level. And at the same time, you look at Tennessee coming off a pretty darn good defensive performance as well against the Vikings. They're going to be looking to kind of impose their will as well in this game. I think that'll be a good matchup.
Yeah, that statistic on Stafford since Jim Bob Cooter took over as offensive coordinator, they'd have only one loss since Cooter took over, if not for the Hail Mary. Richard Rodgers when the Packers stole that game on Thursday night last December. So the Packers obviously have a chance to get to 2-0. It would be another great early season matchup if it's 2-0 Packers against 2-0 Lions in week three. Obviously, there's a lot to be sorted out between now and then, but the Lions have to be feeling pretty good about the fact that they went on the road, got a win at Indianapolis, a team that many people think could be headed to the playoffs. Now they're playing another AFC South team. They're going to have half of their AFC South matchups out of the way already.
I know as difficult it was for them to lose Sue, and I know there were some questions about Martin Mayhew and why would you let that happen. Still impressive, though, what they've been able to do in terms of really transitioning this defense now. It isn't the same group as it was 2 or 3 years ago, but I like what they're building there, and it's going to be difficult for both of these teams to handle before the bye week.
Yeah, and I think the longer DeAndre Levy at linebacker gets away from that injury and all those problems that he had last year, I think he'll be able to straighten out some things for that defense. So we'll throw it to one more break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, final segment here before Sunday Night Football, Packers-Vikings. I think the question on everybody's mind as U.S. Bank Stadium opens for the first time for a regular season game is just how loud is this place going to be? And we've read the stories and heard about the construction of the roof and that it's designed to keep all the sound in and make it reverberate and all of that, to the point that they're talking it could actually be louder than the Metrodome when that crowd gets to that fever pitch.
Yeah, well, first off, I don't want to hear that. With an open-air press box, I'm only 28. I have delicate eardrums. I have a lot of years of listening to ahead of me. But it is interesting. Some of the things I've read, too, not only is it structured to reverberate back down, it's also allegedly designed to throw the sound back at the opposing sideline too.
With the tilted, the tilt
with the way
to
it's
the
tilted
roof.
Or whatever. Yeah. So I'm not I didn't get into architecture. But the thing is that you and I, we have some memories. You have more than I do of the Metrodome. I have a hard time believing something could be any louder than that that's safe for human consumption. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I know no matter what, it's going to be challenged, you know, for Aaron Rodgers and that offensive line trying to make it all work.
Yeah, certainly no environment was anything like the Metrodome, a very unique place and one of the loudest places I've ever been. I never considered it the loudest, though, at least from the games that I covered there. And maybe it was partly because there were enough Packer fans there to drown out a little bit of the noise. The loudest one for me, the two primetime games that I've covered at New Orleans in the Superdome that the Packers have played in the Mike McCarthy era, those were the ones that gave me the long-lasting, ear-splitting headaches. I mean, coming back, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday the following week, I still wasn't over it necessarily. My head was still hurting from the noise. So I can't even imagine, I wasn't there for it, but what the noise would have been like in the Superdome for that 2009 NFC title game between the Saints and the Vikings. That had to be unbelievable.
I can't imagine. I mean, that's one of the things, too. The only time I've been to the Superdome, I mean, the way the building is constructed, the press box is almost near the ceiling.
Yeah.
So all that noise that's filtering up, we're getting the full brunt of that. So whatever they're feeling on the field, I mean, I have to imagine it has to be just as loud as what we're hearing in that atmosphere. But the Metrodome was interesting because it was in the middle of really the fans. I mean, it was almost like you had a little booth in the middle of the stands.
Yeah, like a mezzanine type level. Yeah.
So I don't know what the difference was in terms of the loud, you know, ness of everything, but it was a challenge, and I can only imagine what it's like trying to play a football game in it.
Yeah, well, we'll hear the horn. We'll hear the loud crowd. They'll probably have, you know, the flames and all that stuff when they do the pregame introduction. So it'll be quite the atmosphere, and regardless of what happens, we won't have to go back there for about a year. So
that'll be nice.
All right, well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, at Wes Hott on Twitter, at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.